Hey, this is Rob Thomas, and welcome to the audio commentary available just on slaverats.com. Here we have the original pilot cold open that was cut from the final air version. Let me tell you why I love this and why it killed me when the note came down from the network that they would choose to lose this portion. I wanted to really introduce the show as a noir show, and here in this original cold open, I feel like I hit like six of the seven elements of noir. The first-person Raymond Chandler-esque voiceover, the neon, the wet streets, everything happening on the seedy side of town. And it also felt like a very cool way to introduce Veronica as a PI. The way the pilot version aired without this scene, I really had a bit of clumsy voiceover there in the first act in which Veronica had to say, you know, while other kids are out working at the mall, I'm out chasing bail jumpers. This bit of score that you hear here, I composed on my computer while we were editing down the show. Not really my forte, but I was happy with this particular piece, and I ended up having to sign with ASCAP to get it. I own the rights to this 12 seconds of music. The other thing that I missed not having this cold open was Veronica's views on her love life. I love this song. I will admit that freely. I think it's sort of the perfect Veronica Mars theme song. I'm not particularly crazy about the about a standard clips package. You know, I wish we were doing an HBO one that was this cool minute and a half art noir piece, but it works all right. What do people actually say on these commentaries, by the way? I think I've watched two. I've watched the one for Say Anything and The Office. That's it. So if I seem clumsy with it, there you go. So another element of noir that we were using here in the Veronica Mars pilot was the disjointed time sequencing, which you see here, us going back in time 20 hours. I wanted a really cool introduction to Veronica, to what type of girl she is. And I also wanted to create a girl who had no friends, really. And if there was one success over the course of this pilot episode for her. She's got so much going wrong in the pilot that sort of a burgeoning friendship would make us feel good about her journey over the course of the pilot. This is one of the first scenes we shot, and these are all real students at this particular high school, Oceanside High School, and they came out on the Saturday for this shoot, which was very cool. Just FYI, this particular scene was a scene that I had cut from the original pilot, and the network asked for this scene to be back in the show. So when we were trying to get down to time, this was a scene that I thought we could lose. I don't dislike the scene for any particular reason. It just felt slow to me. And in creating Veronica's smart but cynical worldview, it felt maybe a hair on the nose to me. But the network liked it, so it stayed. We around the Veronica Mars offices, you know, we joke a lot about casting San Diego actors, and we haven't had. Well, let me say, we've had mixed luck casting San Diego actors. A lot of people that we've enjoyed, and along with some disasters. But both these actors that you see here playing Van Clemens and Deputy Sax are a couple of guys who auditioned down in San Diego who we've continued to use in every episode because we just sort of adore them. A big bit of trouble on this episode was the ongoing dog training problems that we had. Can't tell you how much the dog slowed down production, which owes greatly to why we do not have backup one beyond the pilot. I didn't want to work with those dog trainers again. I often write with a song in mind for a scene, and this is one of the examples of a song that I had in mind from the time I wrote it, this Dandy Warhol song, Insincerely Because I absolutely adore how this song works in the show. And here we get our introductions to Duncan, played by Teddy Dunn, and Logan, played by Jason Doring. I love these sort of this dreamy flashback look that our DP Victor Hammer came up with, making these flashbacks seem sort of surreal, otherworldly. A point of reference for me musically, quite a bit, and a little bit visually, was Sofia Coppola, particularly The Virgin Suicides. You know, we opened with an air song that I think came from that, and the rape scene, The Death in Vegas, I think, is from Lost in Translation, though actually that second one I had no idea until after we had finished shooting the pilot. This is literally, I believe, the first scene we shot over the course of the pilot. We had no idea, you know, it was written for an interior cafeteria like any other high school show, but it being Southern California, we found that there were plenty of high schools that had outdoor cafeterias, which not only did we use in the show, in the pilot episode, but continued to use when we built our sets on stage down at San Diego later. A real star-making turn here from Weevil, played by Francis Capra. I do love this scene. This was a scene that we auditioned actors with, and that we both auditioned Veronica and Weevil with. And you know, it was such a this scene really separated the girls from the women. To stand up to a motorcycle gang leader with this sort of dialogue. A brief little footnote about this that I love. The original line, I believe, that standards and practices would not allow for us was something like, Weevil says, "When I want you to open your mouth, you'll hear me unzipping." That they didn't allow. However, they did allow the line, "Sister, the only time I care what a woman has to say is when she's riding my big old hog. Even then, it's usually just oohs and ahs." And I'm not sure really which one's dirtier at the end of the day, but but that's what we got through. These two guys have both reappeared in the show. Hector, who you'll actually see a bit more of here in season two. He's got the famous hyena laugh that we all enjoyed so much, both these guys. And then we're introduced to Sheriff Lamb, played by Michael Muni. A bit of a prick, this Sheriff Lamb. This particular scene was shot about 4 in the morning when we were going into hours of overtime, and our line producer was literally having a heart attack saying he would never work again. He did continue to work for the show, but it was a long, cold, awful night, and we were running out of time, and I was so pleased at the end of the day with how well this scene cut together, because it was really shot on the fly. Mark Pisnarski, our director, did just a fantastic job of capturing all the beats and the danger. You better go see the wizard, ask him for some guts. What was the original line for that? I know it had to do with balls. It was something about balls, asking for some balls. This particular scene that you shot, the interesting footnote about this is that that pool was filled with leaves and debris originally. When we shot it, we filled it with leaves and debris. It was like a quarter full with leaves in it, and the president of CBS told us that people wouldn't want to see Veronica living in such poor conditions. You know, the thing that I asked for was I wanted it to look like the Karate Kid apartment, and that's what I was given. At the end of the day, we had to special effect in the clean water. Here we see. This song that we're using was not the original song. originally it was the Coldplay song "Don't Panic," but at the end of the day, Coldplay wouldn't allow us to use the song, which is just as well, since every pilot in town had used Coldplay the year before. I really do love this wordless bit of business here from Veronica and Wallace out on the beach, just Veronica feeling a sense of connection, another loner, another person on their own. And I also love that Veronica saw that he was a kid brave enough to go right back out in public, that he wasn't being a shut-in. I don't know if anyone caught that, but that was part of the intention. Here we have the first scene with Cliff McCormick, played by Darren Norris, who I am so pleased with and proud of. And for those who don't know, Darren and I have been friends since we were 3 years old. And we fell out of touch for, I left, we were both in Washington State. I moved to Texas. We fell out of touch from ages 10 to 24. And then my band came through LA to play when I was 24 years old. And I heard Darren was working as an actor in LA and looked him up, and we reconnected. And he's so fantastic. Just several of our favorite lines in the show here. It's tawdry being one. I also love Veronica's delivery of "we're efficient" here. For those who don't know, Darren Norris also plays Spotswood in the Team America movie. Celeste Kane in pretty fantastic wardrobe. It's a bit heavy-handed, but I do like seeing her in this. And Enrico Colantoni, his first little glimpse on screen. And he has one little word, and he's out. Rico, by the way, if I did nothing else right on the pilot, casting Enrico Colantoni was perhaps my finest moment. He delivers lines unlike other actors deliver lines. I saw 30 or 40 actors, all name actors who've starred in shows, to play Keith Mars. And Rico, coming off of Just Shoot Me, was hot enough that when actors reach a certain point, they don't have to audition anymore. So Rico didn't have to audition for us until we offered him the part. And then he only had to audition for Les Moonves at CBS. And I just had a feeling about him. I'm such a huge Galaxy Quest fan. And he was everything that I wanted him to be. And while I say if I did nothing else right, the other right thing, though it's very, very obvious, is casting Kristen Bell in the show. She is just as talented as anyone I've ever worked with. Mark Pisnarski and I looked at each other about day three of the pilot and said, she is a star. We were just so certain that we had someone special in the role. I will say one of the most difficult lines to walk on Veronica Mars that we struggle with from the pilot to the episodes that we're breaking now in year two is figuring out how much Keith can know of what Veronica does. It is because we want to play this relationship between father and daughter is a pretty great one. And we always wonder, where would the line come when any sensible father would just say, you know what, Veronica, we're moving out of town. I care too much about your safety and well-being, and we're going to get over as far away from this as we can. Speaking of Jake Kane, one of the interesting bits of trivia here is that we did not have Kyle Secor for the pilot. Kyle Secor is a very expensive actor, and yet Jake Kane was only going to appear at a distance through surveillance. He didn't have any lines in the pilot. And in trying to save on budget, what we did was we just cast an extra to do this walk and to shoot the surveillance stuff at the Camelot motel door. And then later, when we got ordered to series, we hired Kyle and reshot those scenes so that it was Kyle in those pictures. Here we find Amanda Seyfried, and she only has two or three lines in the pilot, but she makes the most of it, and I have to say she was the biggest surprise of the year for me. When you're casting a series regular, you get to see all the best actors in town because all of them want to be series regulars. When you're casting somebody who is just maybe going to appear from time to time as the dead girl, you don't get the same sort of level of actors. And I've never had a more cut and dry audition than I did with Amanda Seyfried, where she was about 100 times better than anyone else that we saw. She was just spectacular. And then ended up being so good in the show that I probably used her 3 or 4 times as much as I imagined going into the season. Another bit of business, this Lily Dead by the Pool was reshot later. Originally, Lily was found in the ocean. And I had a plan for how everything went down. But when the series got ordered, the network asked to hear my overall plan, and they just felt like it was too dark and creepy. It would have meant that Jake Kane actually disposed of his own daughter's body in the ocean, trying to protect his son Duncan. They decided that was too dark, and we came up with this this compromise. Now we catch back up in time. We find Veronica where we saw her in the original opening, and like I said, this is a bit we reshot with Kyle Secor. I really like this juxtaposed time sequencing, but things that don't test well, and whether pilots do well or don't do well in testing, often hinges on how confused the audience is, and the disjointed time seemed to throw some people, which is another reason why they wanted to lose that opening. They also wanted to have the show be a high school show, which is why they wanted us starting in the high school. I thought of it more as a detective show, which was a slightly different philosophy. Originally, when we cut to those two guys at the computer in the high school, you saw Lily Kane underwater, and they were in it a bit more. They had more commentary in the recutting. They didn't. Also, this scene of Logan was added at the last minute. It was a scene that I gave him after we cast Jason Doring, simply because Jason is so fantastic and has such an intensity. And while we reveal him as quite an obnoxious jerk in the pilot episode, I felt like in that scene you see that he isn't one-dimensional, that he does have some soul to him. Corinne Bohr plays Leanne Mars. She does a fantastic job in this pilot episode. Very wound up. We did cut another scene of Leanne's that would have been in my cut of the show, in which we see Keith pulling her out of a bar drunk and putting her in the back of the car with Veronica inside as well. The network got very nervous about how dark the show was, and that's one of the scenes we lost. The other bit of business that we lost was the walk that Veronica has after the rape, which I will discuss, I guess, when we get there. That would make more sense. Little note, this was the last night of filming that we did on the Veronica Mars pilot, and Francis Capra came up to me just before we were starting to shoot and said, hey, buddy, man, I know you're a really good writer, but you know, this line, this "We will love you long time" line, I don't think I can say it. I don't get it. Why don't you try writing something better? Fortunately, I was able to convince Francis to do the line, and I actually love the line. I think even if you went back to Francis today, he would prefer not to have said it. Felix was a guy who actually auditioned for the Weevil role, and it was an actor that we liked. And when he came down to San Diego to audition for this Felix role, he was the clear winner, and we really loved him. We saw a bunch of him in year one. Very funny actor. This dog stunt, FYI, was one of the more painful few hours of my life, trying to get that dog to jump out of the back of the car. It wasn't easy. And if you slow down the video, you'll see just how how lame it will look. Here is our first mention of Shelley Pomeroy, and who is a girl I went to high school with, a friend of mine. The weird bit of trivia about Shelley Pomeroy is that her cousin actually plays Madison Sinclair. Her real-life cousin plays Madison Sinclair in our show. Very odd bit of business there. Here we have the Death in Vegas song that I so adore, that I think works beautifully. We probably tried 20 songs in this space, but it was very cool. One thing that we did have to correct in year one was this is quite obviously the Kane Estate where we're playing Shelley Pomeroy's party, but we couldn't afford another location, so we just tried to hide the fact. After seeing it all year in season one, if you'll notice in episode 20, or 21 as the fans number it, the trip to the dentist, we say that it was Shelley Pomeroy's party at Duncan's house. It's kind of a backwards catch of that little continuity error. This scene in the original cutting was twice as long. This is such an amazing moment from Kristen. Those are real tears that she produced four takes in a row. She's just a spectacular actress. And then this bit of business that we lost was a much longer walk away from the rape that included her driving by her car, and the tires had been slashed, and people had written "Able, it should have been her" and "slut" on her windows. And again, it was a moment that the network felt was too dark. And here we see Jake Kane with a mystery woman that we will reveal sometime later in the series. If you'll notice, if you'll go back and you see that Earth Day poster up there, it actually covered up the name Oceanside, so that it didn't look like Oceanside High School. And we were fortunate enough to, and this was pure luck, I called Neptune High the Pirates in the pilot script, and we happened to find a school that were the Pilots. But I will say the reason that the Pirates are green and white is because Oceanside High School was green and white. So in that case, the school actually dictated our content. I'm asked frequently if Kristen Bell was what I imagined as Veronica, and she's very close, although I have to admit, her name was Veronica. I imagined a brunette. Another bit of trivia for the show, Alona Tal, who plays Meg in the series, was one of the other two girls that we took to network to audition for the role of Veronica. And Alona, remarkably, is full-on Israeli. Like, I think grew up around Tel Aviv and was literally just off the plane when she came in and auditioned with her flawless American accent, though it's not her first language. She really is pretty impressive. Here we find Wallace. He figures he has one person he can really talk to here in school, so he sits down with Veronica. Early on, writers on the show, when we first started, we were very worried about the Wallace Veronica chemistry. Will people believe these two as best friends? And I think we struggled with it for a little while, and now I can't imagine anyone else in that position. This actor, Corny, was a San Diego hire who we so adored that we have used him several times as our resident imbiber of illegal substances. I'm very proud of this music placement, The Streets, Weak Become Heroes. It just has a feel to it that I feel is right for, photoshopping, I guess. I don't know. The bong that Corny makes for Veronica in his ceramics class. In the original pilot script, it was supposed to be penis-shaped, and Kristen Bell said that her favorite line in the pilot script was, "I'm pretty sure you won't be getting your cock bong back." And unfortunately, they made us change that. Here we have Rico's first big scene coming back from some success in tracking down a bail jumper. And Rico said what drew him to the script was sort of the mix of comedy and drama. And he is, you know what, he's pretty big in this scene, and I find him adorable and charming. But I do think over the course of the series, he continued to ground Keith a bit more, and we're in such a fantastic space now with the relationship between Veronica and Keith. I'm always so pleased when people say it's the best father-daughter relationship on TV, particularly now since I have a daughter, a new daughter, which is very exciting. Whenever you shoot a pilot, you use practical sets. In other words, you don't build any sets. You go out and shoot in practical locations, I should say. So this is a real apartment. It's really near the beach. We paid a location fee to get this place. And so you can do things like walk them outside for a barbecue and have the reflection of the pool in the background. It's something that you're not able to do on stage once you go to series. And it's why pilots shoot for, a typical pilot episode will spend $3 million on. And then after that, the budget will go to around half that. And so you have half the money, and a pilot shoot will be 12 days, and a regular episode shoot will be 8 days. So you're doing a lot more script pages, but you get into a rhythm. And it becomes easier and easier to shoot. Here we find Veronica tracking down Loretta Cancun's, or confirming Loretta Cancun's claim about how the strip club stays open. And here we have Veronica and Wallace arriving just in time for the Logan Eccles locker search, in which they find a bong, which now sits on my desk at work. I love these looks between Logan and Veronica. Jason Doreen is a very intense actor. We had to do several takes to get one where he wasn't actually physically overpowering the vice principal to come after Veronica. The song that we used for this business, this Pada Pada, I think is the name of this song. I did not imagine this being a funny sequence. Not at all. I thought this would be like a heist sequence, something that you would play, that you'd use music like they'd use in Ocean's 11 or something. But the editor put this particular song in, and I stressed and stressed and stressed about it, and finally decided it played fun like this, so we did leave this song. Notice that Veronica calls these two guys Adam and Eddie. Those are friends of mine, Kitsis and Horowitz, who are currently writers for the show Lost. And the year Veronica Mars got picked up, my plan was to hire those guys, but they But UPN picked up last, and they got offered a job as on Life as We Know It before they knew that Veronica Mars was picked up. So they went on to Life as We Know It, and now you can see their work on Lost. So they're struggling, but they're getting by on that show you may have heard of. Another amazing moment from Veronica and from Kristen here. We asked her to do a German accent, and typically you go to a star on a teen show, and they're not going to be able to just switch into a German accent, but Kristen's a real actress. She just didn't cease to amaze. This is a plot point, too, by the way. Leanne Mars was having this conversation with Jake Kane that we planned on addressing over the course of the year, like what she was doing there that night. And we certainly had a plan for it, but we never had a moment where we were able to drop in that bit of business. We had this idea of her, one of two things, either that a friend that she was staying with learned of why Leanne was running and went back to ask Jake Kane for money in Leanne's car, or we were going to play that she had gone back to sort of ask permission to return to Neptune, or to request more money to stay away longer. We were never able to drop that in. I love our wardrobe in this show, in the Veronica Mars pilot. However, this was an outfit I was not crazy about. Just FYI. Nice bit of score as we go back into flashback from our composer, Josh Craman. And I love this close-up of Michael Muni. I love the lighting here. I love his performance here. It's just really, really creepy to me. And once again, Kristen Bell cries on cue. Those are not fake tears, people. That is Kristen just delivering. What an asshole this guy is. We ended up cutting a scene from the season finale in which Keith and Veronica, once they discover that Logan came back to Neptune the day Lily was murdered, that they go to the sheriff's department to tell him, to tell Lam. And Lam kind of is dismissive of them. And Veronica actually dropped in a... actually suggest to Lam that he better go see the wizard and ask for some brains, which I would have loved to have had in there. It was a scene that we actually cut out of the script eventually just because we were 10 pages too long. And the one reason I really wanted to keep that scene in there was to actually use that particular line. We have a song in here. Originally, we used the song by the Donnas, but we were some ridiculous number, like 50 grand over budget in music when we shot the pilot, and I had to replace it with a local band song. And I used my friend's band from Austin. I used a lot of Austin music, which you may know. I played in a band for 10 years in Austin. And this one's called... Atomic Girl by the Wannabes. The lead singer of the Wannabes is named Jennings Crawford, which the close observers of my work may notice is a name that I use a lot. I just like the sound of the name. This was a very flat, gray day out on the beach, and for fun and for a true continuity nightmare, you can start watching Kristen's hair over the course of the scene. It keeps losing poofiness and poofiness until at the end of the day it's just so limp and flat that it looks like she's been on the beach for 10 hours, which she really has, when according to the scripting she should have only been there about 20 minutes. Little continuity problem there with Wallace's arms being in the wrong place when we cut into the close-up. It's important that I note that for you all. And here's Jason's little star-making turn here. I do love his delivery of the line, fun, fun, fun. Your cock bong back. I'm sorry, I'm actually just enjoying watching it right now. Excuse me for taking that little break. But I do watch Veronica's hair as she goes back into the car. She goes from totally flat hair here to big, poofed, blown out. I don't know where she stopped on the way, if some bathroom supermarket had a blow dryer, but she apparently had some work done. Big debate before we ever started shooting about whether the gang members should wear helmets. And I thought it was sort of uncool for them to wear helmets. However, Studio Network really hates sending out the wrong message by having people not wear helmets or making that look cool. And they really preferred that we put them in helmets. However, I realized that since we couldn't really find 12, 17, 18-year-olds who could ride, and some of these guys with their helmets on are really 45, that we were actually much better off having them keep their helmets on. And another funny bit of business here is that we couldn't get any of these headlights to break. The way they make headlights now, it took about 86 shots. Finally, we drilled little holes into them and weakened them until the actors were actually able to bust them out. Before writing Veronica Mars, I wrote a lot of what they would call soft drama. I got my start on Dawson's Creek. I wrote for The Education of Max Bickford. I created a show called Cupid that was a romantic comedy. And so all this business of violence was new to me. People getting hit. By the way, favorite moment here, Jason Doring is always working. If you haven't noticed, he checks his reflection as he's driving off. Like he doesn't really have a bloody nose or a bloody lip, and yet Jason's just so into the moment that he checks himself as he's pulling out. One of the things that they do in pilot testing is they ask you to talk about each of the characters. Did you like them? Did you not like them? And while Veronica actually tested very well, there were so many people there were a lot of people who said that they found the Wallace character weak, and I could never understand that. I was always very impressed with the way he handled himself in this, particularly in that moment when he doesn't give the tape back to Weevil. This song here, another Austin artist, David Garza. Originally, the song that we had in here was Beck, Lost Cause. But it was another song that we couldn't afford. And so when we started putting cheaper music in, I was lucky enough to get this song, a song that I loved back from my Austin music days. I love the lighting in this office. It's just spectacular what our director of photography did. This scene was recut 1,000 times. And originally, Veronica had this whole bit of business about how she found the combination to this safe, and it took about a minute and a half of film time for her to figure it out and get in and break in, and it just really crushed the momentum here in the fourth act, the final act of our show. So finally, I changed the voiceover, so she says, "Dad doesn't think I know where he keeps the combination, but I do," which solved my problems. And then the funny thing is, in the middle of season one, the exact scene that I wrote for this moment originally, we used because Keith had changed the alarm, It was the episode where Veronica gets hit with the ink packet. The network gave two notes that at the time really bothered me, but I think in retrospect were probably good notes here for the final scene. Originally, Veronica found two things in the safe. One, that her father was hiding postcards that had been sent by her mother since she left. And two, that her mother had had this affair with Jake Kane, putting in doubt her own paternity. So this moment when Keith says in the final scene, "Hey, who's your daddy?" was supposed to be a lot more pointed than it was. It was supposed to be like the heaviest moment of the show as Veronica pauses and is unable to answer him. So that was sort of changed in the final cut. And at the end of the day, it gave me a lot more material to play out over the season. And I think that their notion of making sure that Veronica and Keith, even from the first episode, were on the same side and were great father-daughter was probably a good note. I always imagined them being a great father-daughter team, but I was going to leave the pilot with Veronica unsure of her relationship with her father, even though it would have proven out to be pretty great. All right, I made it to the end of the episode. Thanks for listening. Keep watching. Get a Nielsen box.